TSN1290.ca.
Halfway through the Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Minuk with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Mark Lazarus. He's the Blackhawks beat writer for the Chicago Sun-Times. He joins us from Philadelphia, where the Blackhawks and Flyers will do battle in a couple hours' time. Mark, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
No problem. How are you doing?
Doing very well, Mark. Have the Blackhawks been able to find a backup goaltender for today's game yet? Corey Crawford, ill, will not dress for the Blackhawks.
Yeah, they're scrambling right now. They don't have anyone quite lined up just yet. I have to think that Jimmy Waite, the goaltending coach, would be the obvious option. He fills in and practices when Crawford or Darling are sick or hurt or just taking a day off. He was the number one pick of the Blackhawks back in the 80s. He's only 47. He looked pretty good in that alumni game against the North Stars in the Wild last year at the Stadium Series game. It's not an ideal situation, but at least they have a backup goalie who's not like 75 years old, you know?
Yeah, and Mark, you know, let us know. We can text Eddie Belfour. He's nearby in Carmen, Manitoba.
Yeah, or we can get Ray Emery. Isn't he still around these parts?
Yeah, I think he would be there too as well. That'll be always fun when teams have to scrap. I mean, not fun for Joel Quenneville, as you tweeted about, a great conversation. But, you know, always fun for fans, sort of, as they watch teams scramble to find that rare backup amateur tryout goaltender situation.
Yeah, you always hope like a beer leaguer gets signed, like a 50-year-old beer leaguer, and then something weird happens, like a skate breaks or something from the goalie, and he's got to get in there and play for like 30 seconds, and it's Jean-Claude Van Damme and sudden death. And, you know, there's all kinds of good stuff that could happen.
Mark, before we're going to get into the Blackhawks coming up in a second, because, of course, the Jets and the Blackhawks tomorrow in Chicago, but congratulations in store for you. You're writing a book about the Blackhawks.
I am. Thank you. Yeah, it's going to... I just started writing it last night, so it's going to be a little while.
What's it about?
It's basically going to be a kind of an inside look at the kind of modern Hawks renaissance since Kane and Taves arrived, since Rocky Wirtz took over, and kind of the resurgence of the franchise over the last decade or so.
Well, we'll look forward to that hitting the shelves in the, I guess, probably a year or so from now, depending on how quickly you write, but something to look forward to. As I mentioned, the Jets and the Blackhawks tomorrow night in Chicago. Blackhawks team hasn't missed a beat without Jonathan Taves in the lineup. There was some thought, at least earlier in the week, that Taves might be back in time, but now he's been put on IR. Have they, you know, just being extra cautious, or what's going on with Jonathan Taves?
Yeah, they're just taking it really careful with him. I mean, he's your most important player. Even when he's not scoring, he's the most important player on this team. Everything is built around him at the top line center spot. He skated yesterday at practice. He actually participated in about half of the actual practice, too. He's still flexing his back. You could tell he's, you know, it's still there. It's still bugging him. He said that if it were the playoffs and the game really mattered, he'd be out there. He'd be sucking it up, as he said. But there's just no reason. They're in first place. They're playing an Eastern Conference team. It's a back-to-back set this weekend. And it's early December. There's just the Blackhawks know better than almost any team in the league how meaningless these games really are. Just get into the playoffs and worry about it then.
We wanted to ask you, Mark, about Marian Hossa. He had a rough year last year, only had 33 points in 64 games. But this year he's been the old Marian Hossa, 12 goals, 18 points in 24 games. You know,
or the young Marian Hossa, for that matter.
Absolutely. Yeah. A young 37-year-old Marian Hossa. Why do you think, you know, he wanted to prove that he still got it this year?
You know, I think it's a couple of things. First of all, his stats last year were misleading. I've never seen a player more snakebit than he was. He was always around the net. He was still making his big power moves to the goal. He had his chances. The puck just wouldn't go in for him. It was baffling. I mean, we were talking about him getting his 500th goal in training camp last year, and he didn't get it till this year. It was a really strange season, but more than anything, I think he benefited from the four-month summer more than anybody else did. You got to remember, the Hawks won. They won the Cup in 2013, so they played until late June. The lockout season. They went to game 7 of the conference final in 2014, and then they won the cup again in 2015. It was just short summer after short summer after short summer. And remember, Hossa has played in, I think, 5 Stanley Cup finals in the last 9 years, 6 conference finals. That takes a toll, even for a guy in perfect shape like Marian Hossa. I think he really benefited from the time off, a 4-month summer. He's come back. He's in good shape. His back feels good. His legs feel good. And all of a sudden, he's scoring again, and it's He changed his stick blade this year. That might have a little bit something to do with it. But other than that, he looks like the same guy. He's still an amazing back checker, a power around the net, and you still can't take the puck from him.
Mark, the Hawks are 10-1-2 at the United Center and 6-5-1 away. What's the reason, you think, for this disparity?
I don't know. I mean, you got six rookies on this team playing in buildings for the first time. They go on these long road trips that these guys are going, coming from college and the minors. They've never been anything like that before. But you got to remember, I mean, Joel Quenneville's really good at the matchup game, especially at home. He gets the favorable matchups he wanted. You can take advantage of rookies a little bit on the road. There's lots of little things. They haven't been terrible on the road. They haven't really been all that good this whole year. It's a weird team. They're always off a slow start. They're always getting outshot in the first period, and they keep scrambling out victories in the third period. Corey Crawford's been unbelievable. He's stolen about half their wins this year. It's really hard to get your arms around this team right now because standings-wise, they're the best team in the league. But when you watch them play, you see so many flaws that you don't know, like, well, is it a good thing because that means they have so much room to grow and they're already in first place? Or does that mean the bottom's going to fall out? It's really hard to get a handle on this team so far.
Mark Lazarus is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He covers the Blackhawks for the Chicago Sun-Times. He joins us from Philadelphia, where he's covering Blackhawks Flyers. They'll do bad. They'll take to the ice in about 90 minutes' time in the city of brotherly love. Mark, Artemi Panarin, sophomore season in the NHL, doesn't look like he skipped a beat. You know, he's got 21 points in his first 25 games this year. Same Artemi Panarin that made such an impact last season for the Blackhawks?
Yeah, if anything, we're seeing just how important he really is because, you know, look what he did with Patrick Kane last year. He took Patrick Kane, one of the best players in the game, and made him arguably the best player in the game. Got him over 100 points, got him the MVP and the scoring title, stuff that he wasn't able to do with any other winger. And then this year, when Jonathan Toews was struggling, Joel Quenneville puts Patrick Kane on Toews' line to kind of jumpstart him and puts Marian Hossa on Panarin's line. All of a sudden, Hossa blows up. Panarin is a possession monster. He's a great playmaker. He's got that big Ovechkin shot from the Ovechkin spot at the left circle. He can do a little of everything. He's better defensively than he probably gets credit for because of the offensive flair he has. He's really becoming an invaluable part of this lineup, and that's the big question going forward is can they keep him? He's going to be an RFA next year. He's 25 years old, so he's too old to take a bridge deal. This is his chance to cash in. He wants a big contract with big money, and we all know the Blackhawks salary cap situation. It's going to be really hard for them to keep him.
Mark, you know, we were talking about some of the young players in the lineup earlier, some of the rookies, and Trevor Van Riemsdyk is going to come back. He's been out of the lineup since October 21st, activated off of the IR. Jonathan Toews was placed on the IR retroactive to late November. Who do you expect to come out of the lineup, and how have you, how would you assess the play of Michael Kempney and Gustav Forsling, both rookie defensemen?
Yeah, you know, Kempney's been very good. He's really solid. He's got great possession numbers. He's got a big shot. He's starting to use it a little more. I really like him. But he's been the first guy out of the lineup, and it's kind of odd. I mean, they have an embarrassment of riches right now all of a sudden. You know, remember that 2015 Cup run when the Hawks basically did on 3.5 defensemen. Mm-hmm. Now they've got eight guys who can play every day in the NHL. I mean, Van Riemsdyk played 82 games last year, and right now he's probably the number eight defenseman on the team. Michael Roosevelt wasn't supposed to play a lot this year. He's come in and played very well, actually, the last week and a half. Quenville's got a lot of hard decisions to make here. Forsling, on the ice, is probably the weakest of the bunch right now, but his ceiling is so high, you can see why the team is so high on him. He's 20 years old. He's got great instincts. He's got a great first pass out of his own end. He's got a bigger shot than it looks like based on his size. He needs to, you know, like any 20-year-old defenseman, needs to get better in his own end. But the team loves him, and they're giving him all this opportunity. So it's going to be an interesting eight-man rotation because there's four guys locked in with Keith, Chalmerson, Seabrook, and Campbell. Those four other guys have to figure out a way to make it into the lineup every night.
Mark, one guy I saw play a game in the AHL when he left finished college was Tyler Motte, and then he's, of course, transitioned now to with the Hawks. How has he been since his college season ended last year?
Sorry, there was a guy yelling in the background. Can you repeat that one?
No, I was asking you about Tyler Motte. Like, I saw him come in and play for the the Rockford Ice Hogs last season.
Tyler Motte. Got it, yeah.
And so I'm just curious to see what you think of his transition from college to the NHL game.
He's been good. He was the most NHL-ready at the start of the season. He was a guy, he's sturdy, he's fast, he plays a 200-foot game that you know that Joel Quenneville mandates. You know, he was a good spot on that. He's got more skill than you think. I mean, he scored 30 or 40 goals at Michigan last year. He's a good, solid player. Ryan Hartman has kind of caught up to him in terms of the rookies, but Mott is clearly a guy who's ready to play at this level, and he has a veteran savvy to him that you don't expect from a kid his age.
Mark Lazarus, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mark covers the Blackhawks for the Chicago Sun-Times. Mark, Artem Anisimov off to the best start of his career, on pace for his best career numbers. He's got 21 points in 24 games played. You know, he's still young. People think of Anisimov as sort of being, you know, a veteran at this point in time, but he's only 28 years old. You know, why has he been able? Why has he been so good this season so far?
No, his job last year as the center for that Panarin and Kane line was to kind of do the dirty work and let those guys kind of get all the glory. This year, he's just had a better nose for the net. He's going a little harder. He's not hanging back quite as much. He's being a little bit more aggressive, and he's capitalizing on it. He was red hot early in the year, and then he cooled off. The thing about Anisimov is, you know, the reason the Hawks signed him to a contract extension right away when they traded for him, mm-hmm. that Brandon Saad deal, was they thought he was finally going to be that guy who could be that number two center that they've been looking for since, you know, like 2009. And he looks like he's that guy. He's a good all-around game. Like you said, he's still pretty young. I think he's, what, 26, 27? He's a good, solid player. He does everything well. He doesn't do anything poorly. He's a good penalty killer. He's useful on the power play. He can play that net front. He's got size. He's got skill. He's got better hands. He's just a good player. And like you said, he's young. He's only getting better.
Mark, Corey Crawford, we talked about, he's not playing tonight, but he's not expected to be out long-term. You know, I've always been a big fan of Corey Crawford. He's got the two Stanley Cups. He won gold with Canada at the World Cup of Hockey. When is he going to be considered a top goaltender in the NHL? What does he have to do?
You know, we've been talking about this since that 2013 Cup run. I think he's already there. I think the 2015 Cup run kind of won over Chicago, where all his doubters in Chicago finally left. And I think now, after last year, he carried this team. This was a one-line team last year, and he was phenomenal. And he carried them for most of the year. I think now people consider him an elite goalie. I mean, when Mike Babcock makes you the backup goalie on the number one team in the history of the world at the World Cup, ahead of the reigning Vezina winner, I think that's a sign that you've got that respect now. I don't, you know, everyone's going to talk about Carey Price and other guys for the Vezina. People think that Crawford, they've always written him off as a system goalie, kind of like Trent Dilfer of goalies, where he's only won Stanley Cups because of the team in front of him. But anyone who's watched this team, this Blackhawks team, for the last 2 years knows that the guys in front of him are the ones that are getting bailed out by Crawford, not the other way around. He's just been so good for three or four straight seasons now. And anyone who doesn't know that is just not paying attention.
Mark, we'll let you go on this last question. You look at the Blackhawks, and of course, you know, it's Taves and Kane, and then it's Keith and Seabrook. Yet again, they're off to tremendous starts. Keith still looking for his first goal, but he's got 17 assists. Seabrook's got 2 goals and 13 assists for 15 points. Are you surprised that with the mileage on both of these guys, obviously the international games, the Blackhawks' lengthy seasons year in, year out, are you surprised that they just seem to be fine wine getting better with age?
Kane and Taves not so much, because they're only 27, 28 years old. They're still in their primes. Keith is just an absolute freak of nature. I mean, he is obsessed with fitness. He's always at the top of the Hawks fitness charts in training camp every year. He's a guy who's going to be able to play forever, kind of like a Chris Chelios. Seabrook is the one you worry about, just because he plays a harder game, a physical game. He's a bigger guy. He's played, I think, more games than, I think him and Nicklas Hjalmarsson have played more games than anyone in the NHL over the last however many years because of the playoff runs. And he's just at the start of an 8-year contract. That's the contract that has to concern you as a Hawks fan. Seabrook's been great this year. He's got that big shot still. He's formed a nice partnership with Michael Kempe. He's playing with Brian Campbell tonight, but Kempe's been a good partner for him that solidifies him defensively. He's got as good a shot as anyone in the league, and when he uses it on the power play, it almost always results in something good happening. But 8 years is a lot for a guy with that many miles on him, and that's the contract that you have to keep an eye on with this Blackhawks team going forward. At some point, they're going to reach their breaking point with the salary cap, and that's the one you got to be concerned about.
Mark Lazarus covers the Chicago Blackhawks for the Chicago Sun-Times. Mark, really appreciate your time this morning. Good luck. Let us know if you find a backup goaltender.
It might be me for all we know.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we preview the month of December for the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Wild Thing.
Never do that again. They clearly never do that again.
Didn't they used to call you Wild Thing back in college, Drew?
Yeah. Sure. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Frank and I were the only ones that picked the Ottawa Red Blacks.
Just let me know how long you're going to milk this for.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how long this thing's going for.
You know, what is the statute of limitations you have on talking about how you picked the Red Blacks?
I think I'm going to milk it until the Super Bowl.
It's going to be a real long month.
Taking the Cowboys,
by the way.
Go on
a limb, why don't you?
Yep.
You're going to take the best team in the league right now.
Dak Prescott's my boy.
Yeah, Dak Prescott. You had never even heard of Dak Prescott prior to 8 weeks ago.
It's true.
Yes, thank you. We did promise you news from the Winnipeg Jets game day skate in St. Louis. Here it is. By the looks of it, Michael Hutchinson gets the start in goal for the Winnipeg Jets. Connor Hellebuck stayed on the ice a little bit later with the scratches. Usually that indicates he's going to be the backup goaltender. So Hutchinson in net for the Winnipeg Jets. Here's your forward lines. They look very similar to previous games. Ehlers, Scheifele, and Laine. Stafford, Little, Wheeler. Perreault, Lowry, and Tanev. Dano, Kopp, and Thorburn. So we were speculating earlier that we wouldn't mind seeing a more skillful third line with potentially Kyle Connor back in the lineup. Jets coach Paul Maurice obviously did not consult with us prior to that. Kyle Connor stays up in the press box. Perreault, Lowry, Tanev, Dano, Kopp, and Thorburn are your third and fourth lines for the Winnipeg Jets as they face the St. Louis Blues tonight in Missouri. For the Blues, Carter Hutton in net. Jori Lehterä, a healthy scratch. Niall Yakupov gets into the lineup for the St. Louis Blues tonight.
Oh, boy. Well, that's subtraction by addition, as far as I'm concerned. You know, I haven't been a big Niall Yakupov fan.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, subtraction by addition.
Yeah, Jori Lehterä is not a guy you expect to be a healthy scratch, but as we know, Ken Hitchcock isn't afraid to make moves that he thinks is going to benefit the club, right? But, Dave, the big move there, the big change from last game is that Michael Hutchinson starts, right? And, you know, we talked about it, and, you know, Marco Dano is a talented player, but I think, you know, Matthew Perreault has the ability with that, you know, veteran experience to kind of spark that third line and get Adam Lowry and Brandon Tanev going. So the big move is, you know, Marco Dano and Matthew Perreault just basically switching places, right, on the third and fourth lines there, and the defense pairings are staying the same?
Defense pairings, no word on the defense pairing, so I haven't seen that, but I presume they stay the same.
Well, you can't have Matthew Perreault on the fourth line, and we talked about that in the first hour of the show.
But is he wasted playing with guys? Not wasted. I mean, is his impact lessened by playing with guys like Lowry and Tanev, who aren't what you would describe as, I mean, they're skilled hockey players.
Well, Lowry's got 5 goals, and Tanev only has 2, but he's got some skill. I mean, the only other option, Drew, is you put Matthew Perreault on the second line and you drop Drew Stafford down. You're not dropping Blake Wheeler or Brian Little down.
But Marco Dano, I think, has, of the bottom six, I mean, Perreault, I think, has the most offensive talent, but I would say Dano has the second most offensive talent. I'd like to see Perreault with Dano. I don't understand the line of Dano, Kopp, and Thorburn.
Well, hold on a second, though. I mean, Are we talking upside? Because Tanev's got 2 goals and Dano's got 3. So I don't think there's a big discrepancy there.
I'm talking about if you...
Right, but we're talking about tonight's game, not upside.
Well, if you needed somebody in that bottom six to score a goal, who's more likely to score it based on their skill set from what we have witnessed? I would say Marco Dano is more likely to score than Brandon Tanev.
I like Marco Dano, but I'm just saying he's got 3 goals and in less games. But still, you know, Brandon Tanev's got 2 and Adam Lowry's got 5. So right now, none of those guys are scoring. If we're talking about upside, I'd probably say that, yeah, Marco Dano has the highest offensive upside. But right now, I think you're looking to spark that third line. And, you know, Matthew Perreault has done that in the past. And I think Paul Maurice, Dave, is trying to do it again.
Yeah, but if you want to spark the third line, and I agree with you, spark the third line with Perreault and with Dano, not with Lowry and Tanev, because those guys are much more of grinders and... They're not offensively naturally talented, whereas Dano is more so than those guys are.
Sure, but okay. But
go ahead, Dave.
He's not lighting it up right now.
I know he's not, but go ahead, Dave.
My suspicion would be that the coach is simply thinking that Perreault will be taking shots, have Lowry in front of the net to grab any rebounds, potentially get talent. I mean, look, Pro, again, facilitator, can pass the puck very well, has great vision. Also takes has a deceptively good shot. He doesn't use it a tremendous amount.
Accurate.
But he has a pretty good shot. So, I mean, but again, so what I'm saying is if you've got Pro on the wing, you've got him taking the shot, and then you've got a guy like Lowry who can be in front, who's big, can collect a rebound. Same with Tanev. Tanev's a bit of a mucker. Look, I don't disagree with you, Drew. I mean, maybe Dano. I understand what you both are saying. I'm not. I see what Ezzy's saying too. I mean, we're not talking about a guy who's got 5 goals and one who has 0.
Right.
We're talking about guys who have fairly comparable numbers. Dano seems to hold on to the puck very well. He seems to keep the puck. He's better than Burmistrov, but in that sense that he's a very good possession guy. Like the puck seems to stick to his stick.
But
you know,
Burmistrov's possession numbers are possession for uselessness, though.
No. I'm not comparing the two. I'm simply saying, like, Burmistrov always seemed to be able to hold on to the puck, is what I'm getting at.
And there should be like an advanced stat specifically for Burmistrov. Like, there should be a relative Burmy
puck holding for, or that ends in nothingness.
That's like Drew, Mike holding it that results in nothingness.
Touche, David.
Anyways, all I'm saying with that, like, I think realistically, I would prefer to see more offense on that third line, like we discussed, in a previous segment, as opposed to what the Jets have right now. But you know, you're dealing with the cards that you have currently in the lineup. I mean, I guess not really because you have Kyle Connor, but I mean, I think if anything, what we're seeing with Kyle Connor sitting one more game is that it's only a matter of time before he's heading down to the Manitoba Moose, because I mean, what's the purpose of keeping this kid not playing NHL hockey?
It doesn't make any sense.
No.
I mean, it doesn't make any. I mean, it's
because remember,
the games he was in the last week or 2 weeks, he's played a handful of minutes.
In the previous examples, Joel Armia, Chase DeLeo, you knew that those guys were placeholders for a guy who was on the IR or a guy who was maybe, you know, just out going to be a one game or something like that. So you knew it was a temporary situation. Kyle Connor is up in the air. What is exactly happening with him? And it's a question that's continuously being asked more and more of this coaching staff. Like, what's your plan for Kyle Connor? Because again, what is the advantage to the player to be sitting there not playing hockey?
Yeah, the coaching staff is getting questions of what's your plan, period. I think a lot of
when
we did the expectations review last week, we gave Paul Maurice a -1, saying that we didn't think he has done as good of a job based on our preseason expectations.
Well, in the first 20
first 25
plus games
of the season.
Year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's all. And then we'll do it again at the halfway point, and we'll, you know, we'll reevaluate to see if it's improved at all. But this continual, the way that Kyle Connor has been treated or handled in the past week to 2 weeks since he came off the IR has left a lot of people scratching their heads.
Well, the reality is, regardless of who's in the lineup, regardless of who's a healthy scratch, they have to get more contributions from the second line. Too high a percentage of their goals are coming from their top two lines, right? We've talked about it. It's Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, Nikolai Ehlers, and Patrick Laine who are getting the most of the goals for this team. And they need to get contributions from Brandon Tanev, Adam Lowry, whoever is in the bottom three. Matthew Perreault, you got to throw in there. Drew Stafford, I would put in that category as far as secondary scoring, because I think if they're healthy, you know, there's a good chance that Drew Stafford is on the third line, and they have a guy like whoever it is that's playing on the second line. So, you know, they got to get more contributions, Drew, from those bottom two lines.
No argument whatsoever. Quickly, the month of December, which was supposed to be our topic for the Jets, 14 games in the month of December, 7 at home, 7 on the road. They lost the first home game to the Oilers, obviously, on Thursday. Two sets of back-to-backs tonight and tomorrow night, in St. Louis and in Chicago, and then next Saturday, Sunday, at Edmonton and then at Calgary. 4 games versus the Central Division, 2 at Chicago, at St. Louis, home against Colorado. 5 games against the Pacific, 2 versus Edmonton, 2 at Vancouver, where they play those rare back-to-back, or they play a Tuesday in Vancouver, then a Thursday in Vancouver, which is
yeah,
odd.
Yeah, no, it's back-to-back away games.
Yeah.
It's back-to-back in days, but back-to-back in the sense that they stay there.
Very weird. You don't often see that in the schedule at all.
Really weird.
And that's right before Christmas, where they have 4 days off. So,
although if you're going to have to spend extra time in a city, Vancouver is not one that you're upset to be spending.
Yeah, the only time I can remember anything similar to that is when Washington played those 2 straight games here in Winnipeg,
right,
when we were still in the Southeast Division. But that was more of the geographical concern than
anything
else.
I think it's the only time. This would only be the second time it's ever
right,
happened.
Because it's very rare. You got two against Vancouver, two against Edmonton, one against Calgary, three games against the Metropolitan where they've struggled significantly.
Yep.
You have the Rangers coming to town. You have the Rangers coming to town next Thursday. You also have the Blue Jackets and the Islanders. Islanders on New Year's Eve. And then two games against the Atlantic Division, Detroit on Tuesday. And then the Florida Panthers visit the week after that.
Yeah, Drew, and December is obviously an easier schedule than November when they played 16 games in 29 days. But, yeah, you know, it's not an easy schedule. You know, as you mentioned, you got the back-to-back this weekend against St. Louis and Chicago. But that back-to-back on the 10th and 11th against Calgary and Edmonton is not going to be easier when you consider that Edmonton already defeated the Jets twice this year. So, and you know, you got Detroit and the Rangers next week at home. But, you know, looking at it, you know, in shorter term sense, these next four games are crucial. And, you know, you start with the back-to-back here this weekend, but then Detroit and the Rangers. I mean, the Rangers are a top team in the Eastern Conference. And the Detroit Red Wings, you know, they might not be at the top of the Eastern Conference standings, but they're still a difficult team to play against. And you've already beat them once in Detroit, so you get them at home here. But, you know, I think you got to win three of the next four. We talked about it. You can't win. You can't play 500 hockey anymore, Dave. You got to start winning. You got to go on a bit of a streak here, win three or four games because they need points at this point in the season.
And to Drew's point from earlier in the show, you can't be a poor road team if you want to do anything. I mean, Chicago Blackhawks, you know, may be the exception just because, and they're still above 500 on the road.
6-5-1.
Yeah, they just haven't been dominant on the road, but they've been above 500. Whereas if you look at the Jets, what are they? 3-8-2. So 3-8-2. I mean, it's just simply not good enough. And the fact of the matter is, they call it home ice advantage for a reason. You know, like the whole idea is that you should have an advantage. You have the line matchups you want. So that's your...
Well, they've done their job at home. 8-5 at home. They've done their job at home.
Right. But what I'm saying is that you should, because that's the whole idea is that you have the advantage versus where you go on the road. It's kind of like, but I'm saying is that's where kind of you separate a really good team from a middling team, because the middling teams can't get the matchups they want and are dominated by the opposition in their home building, as opposed to the teams that can go out and kind of set the tone, set the pace, and kind of, play the game that they want to play. And that's the key, right? We talk about what's the Jets' game. Well, are the Jets able to impose their will on teams? They haven't so far on the road, but they're going to have to if they want to make the playoffs.
Jets and the Blues coming up in 7 hours' time, and then tomorrow the Jets and the Blackhawks. That's 31 hours from now. Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is coming up next on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
I'm ready.
Flipped it up ahead, and it's Radulov that brings it in. Drags it around. Hoffman goes to the goal. Scores!
Panarin fights through to the middle and shoots. He scores!
The Russians are coming. The Russians are coming. The Russians are coming back to the NHL. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, hour number three here on TSN 1290. It's brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com.
Drew, are you going to put Putin on a jersey?
No, I'm not going to put Putin on a jersey. Can I finish my promo here? Are you going to keep interrupting me with nonsense?
I'll continue.
Thank you very much. Or visit Keener Jerseys' new showroom at 982 Portage Avenue, the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Keener Jersey is also a great follow on Instagram. You guys were showing me pictures earlier today. Somebody has taken into Keener three Detroit Vipers jerseys to get personalized. That's a bit of a random team to have three jerseys of.
IHL.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, to get
Gordie Howe's last team. Did he play?
Technically, I think he played a shift for them.
He played one shift for them in like 1990.
Oh, wasn't it 2000? I thought it was in the year 2000 because that would have made seven decades.
Right. All the decades. Yeah, you're right. Maybe it was 2000 then.
Anyways, if you always enjoy seeing the random jerseys that people have, and Keener jerseys on Instagram also will help you out.
My former boy, Peter Sikora of the New Jersey Devils, and he played one season with the Detroit Vipers.
Well, you know, the fallout that you and Peter Sikora had, where he's now your former boy, it was really upsetting to me.
It It was 97-98 for Gordie Howe's one shift.
There you
one
go.
Game, one shift with the Detroit Vipers.
You and Peter Skora aren't buddies anymore?
I don't know why I said former. I don't think I said former, but...
Yeah, you did. You said
well,
your,
I didn't
former,
mean to say
your former buddy, Peter Skora.
No, I said my boy, but I don't know why I said former boy. I think I meant to say former devil.
Yeah, I knew what you meant. I just wanted to throw you under the bus a little bit.
But if you have a Peter Skora Vipers jersey, I mean, you're hardcore.
If you have three of them, you're really hardcore.
And there was another Miro Chetan in there.
Yeah, were there two Miro Chetan and one Peter Skora?
Yeah, home and away Miro Chetan.
You're hardcore at that point in time. Anyways.
I always thought Chetan should play for the Devils.
Knock, 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 knock. The Russians are coming, as I said at the start of the segment.
Are they? Where are they?
Well, they're coming back to the NHL, according to our buddy Michael Trakos, with an interesting article in the National Post.
It's a great article.
Yeah. Talking about how the it was not that many years ago, maybe about half a decade ago, where the influence of the KHL saw the least number of Russians play in the NHL in decades since the Soviet Union fell. In 2012-2013, there were only 29 Russians that played in the NHL. There was a high of 73 back in 2000-2001. But since 2012-13, you're seeing a reverse trend. Now the number of Russians in the NHL is increasing because the influence of the KHL is waning. The hockey is not as good. The facilities are not as good. The money, particularly with the Russian economy struggling and the ruble down to 65 cents on the U.S. dollar, certainly not as good. Are we seeing a rejuvenation now of the Russian influence in the NHL?
Yes. And I think part of that has to do with a guy like Artemi Panarin, even though that's in the last couple of years here. I think there was a hesitancy, guys, of NHL teams, and we've seen it at the draft, Dave. I think it was because of the unknown of whether some of these Russian players were going to come over and play in the American Hockey League or the NHL, as opposed to staying in Russia and really waiting to see if they were going to get a entry-level contract in the NHL, right? So I think we are seeing a renaissance of Russian players in the NHL, Drew. And, you know, Valery Nichushkin, for example, is mentioned in the article by Michael Trakos. He's a guy that decided to go play in the Russian Continental Hockey League. But certainly, I mean, there was a period there where it looked like, and I'd say it probably started around 2009 or 2010, when we saw less and less Russian players, not only in the NHL, but being drafted into the NHL. And now that trend is reversing. Nikita Zaitsev is a good example that Michael Trakos uses here. Nikita Zaitsev right now is on the top pairing of the Toronto Maple Leafs alongside Morgan Rielly, and Zaitsev was not drafted. So he was an undrafted guy who was signed by the Leafs. He was also playing on the top pair for Russia at the World Cup of Hockey. So, I mean, there are more and more guys that are deciding to sign in the NHL because, obviously, it's not only the better league, but, you know, there's the opportunity to make more money. And, you know, you can make a significant amount of money in the KHL. Look at Pavel Datsyuk is another guy who decided that he wanted to retire in Russia. I mean, the guy's a Hall of Famer. He's only going to play a couple of more years, and then he's going to retire. But certainly, Drew, yes, I think... You know, Russians are finding the NHL more attractive. The NHL teams are finding Russians more attractive. And I think NHL teams are starting to not consider, whether or not some of these Russian players are going to come over to North America, and they're deciding to draft them higher.
Well, that's what I was going to ask now. There was always that sort of hesitancy, at least in the last, decade. There's a hesitancy necessarily to draft Russian players particularly high because they always had the fallback option of going home to Russia. We saw it, of course, with Alex Burmistrov. We saw it this past offseason with Valery Nichushkin. Is that still a concern if you're, considering drafting a Russian player high in the first round that, if things don't work out, with Nichushkin, things worked out well for the first season. Then he had injury troubles. And he decided that it just wasn't worth his bother to spend the next couple seasons with the Dallas Stars or potentially the Texas Stars of the AHL. So he went home to Russia. Does it still give you pause about drafting a guy, a Russian player, that high, Dave?
No, because I think a 65-cent ruble to the dollar is pretty much what is going to be the determining factor. I think that when these young guys have the opportunity to come to the NHL, be productive NHL players, be everyday guys, and more importantly, make NHL money paid in American dollars, you're going to take that opportunity. I mean, look, we know with hockey players, they have a finite period of time, you know, unless you're, you know, elite to play professional sports. And so realistically, you really need to take advantage of those opportunities to get, you know, a high level of money, you know, in the millions of dollars to really kind of build up your nest egg, because you really don't know how long it's going to last. So realistically, you have to take whatever opportunity you can get. And if the NHL, look, if you want to be loyal to your home country, then you play for Russia in World Cups or the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't need to play for Russia in, you know, a Russian, you know, continental hockey team, league team. You can play for them, like I said, nationally, but you don't have to play for them locally during the season. You're going to go to the NHL. It's the best league in the world. It still continues to be the best league in the world. The fears that, you know, the KHL was going to come in and kind of usurp that position, and they were flashy, I think it's kind of retreated, and now we see really what the KHL is, which is, again, it's good, and it's managed to, they've invaded, like the Russians like to do, they've invaded Finland, they've gone into China, they're trying to really expand as much as they can, despite the fact that teams are folding. But I still think they're always going to be the little brother to the NHL.
Well, yeah, the NHL is much better, Drew. And I think, you know, to Dave's point, it's a domino effect, right? The ruble's not doing well. And the Continental Hockey League has started to lose some teams. It's not as stable as it was 5 or 6 years ago. I remember back in 2010, we were talking about, you know, the Russian Hockey League and obviously the Sochi Olympics in 2014 and how the KHL was a threat. And it was a threat to a certain degree. But, you know, we haven't talked about Alexander Radulov and him coming back to play with the Montreal Canadiens. You know, he was a very good player in the Continental Hockey League with CSKA Moscow. And I think him coming over is big, too. Like, we talked about Panarin and Zaitsev and some of these other guys. But, I mean, I think it's a domino effect, and you're starting to see some of the NHL teams benefit. But it's also because, regardless of some of the good players that you see in the Continental Hockey League, the NHL is always going to be head and shoulders above the Continental Hockey League. And it's always going to be an option for some of these players. But I think the biggest thing for me, Drew, is NHL teams are not going to be scared off from drafting Russian players because there's going to be a fear that they're going to stay in Russia. I think these Russian players still want to come over to the NHL and play in the NHL.
17 Russians drafted in the NHL the last two seasons each, which was the highest number since, I think, about 2004. So it does seem to be that the fear is lessening. 42 Russian players played in the NHL last season.
Well, Mikhail Sergachev was playing for the Windsor Spitfires, and he's back with the Windsor Spitfires, drafted 9th overall by the Montreal Canadiens.
Mm-hmm.
And so that just shows you he wanted to come play in Ontario. Not the first guy to do it, won't be the last guy to do it, but, I mean, he's one of those players that realized he could increase his draft stock if he came over and played in Canada.
Well, here's the money quote, and it comes from our good friend Tom Lynn, who's been on the show multiple times. Artemi Panarin's success obviously helps, said player agent Tom Lynn, who represents Panarin. It helps lead the way, and everyone kind of rushes over to ride the wave of success. There clearly is a large uptick for Russian guys in the 15 to 18 years of age range coming over. I'm getting two of these requests 5 years ago. Now I'm getting one a month. That's about, you know, sort of that 15 to 18 year old to come over and play in Canadian junior hockey. There were 11 Russians selected in the 2011 import draft for the CHL. That number grew to 22 players last year. So that's doubled in the span of 4 years. So it certainly does go to show you that Russian hockey players are identifying the NHL and the CHL as the best breeding ground for their future success as players.
Has Yakov Smirnov ever played Rumors?
Or does Rumors play Yakov Smirnov?
In Russia?
Well, that's,
I get it.
Well, he's a funny Russian comedian.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. He's Yakov Smirnov.
Always loved Yakov Smirnov.
You just like Smirnov.
I was just going to say, you like Smirnov. I'm not so sure about the Yakov.
Yeah,
question.
You can do without Yakov. Let's go to break. When we come back, is it time for the NHL to adopt the 3-2-1 point system? We've talked about it a bunch. We'll talk about it again. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
On the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
By staying with a 2-1-0 system, it would actually compact the standings even more, create artificial parity, and it has. But my argument now, Scott, is that we've gone, the pendulum has gone even the other way. I mean, I think even today there were 15 teams that were within 3 points.
Pierre LeBrun, TSN Hockey Insider, ESPN.com columnist, advocating for the return or the introduction of the 3-2-1 point system. Something obviously we've discussed before on this program and throughout the hockey world. The 3-2-1 point system means that for a regulation win, you get 3 points, i.e. the Jets would have earned 3 points for their victory over the New Jersey Devils on Tuesday night. For a overtime or a shootout win, that team gets 2 points and the losing team gets 1 point. The 3-2-1 system puts extra weight and it gives you extra credit for winning a game in regulation as opposed to winning a game in overtime or in the shootout. Is it time for the NHL to adopt this system?
It's an interesting, point system, right? And you see that in soccer, where you get 3 points for the win. And it's something that they've looked at. And I know that, general managers, the board of governors, they've discussed this. I don't think it's been something necessarily, Drew, that's, been preeminent as far as the topics at these meetings. But, I think, that you could argue, Dave, that there's going to be more teams that will be out of the playoff race if you give 3 points for a win and you don't have the system that you have now where you get 1 point if you bring it to overtime or you bring it to the shootout and don't get the win. But, I mean, I personally would like to see it. I actually really like this idea. And, for all the talk of parity, and I realize that, every team, is still in it right now. If you look at it, like even Arizona, who is in last place in the NHL, I mean, they put together 4 or 5 wins and they're right back in it. But let's say that, there's still 27 or 28 teams here in early December that are in it, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you brought in a 3-point system, you'd probably have 4 or 5 more teams at least that were probably out of it right now. So, I think it's something that's worth looking at. I mean, you guys know, I've been someone who said that you should have tie games again in the NHL.
Yeah.
And I realize people think that's ridiculous.
I don't think it's ridiculous.
I think the shootout is nonsense. And I realize it's been 10-plus years since they've brought in the shootout. But as far as I'm concerned, whenever a game goes to a shootout, I turn the TV off. And if I'm at the MTS Center, I'll watch it, obviously.
And if I'm at the MTS Center, I close my eyes and put my hands over my eyes.
You know what I mean. I mean, flip a coin.
Yeah, of
course. Who knows
what's
going to happen in a shootout? I mean, we saw, we've seen some, pretty exciting shootouts, but we've seen some pretty awful shootouts as well, Dave. So I think it's worth looking at, but I don't think it's going to be implemented.
I think there's zero chance. And I'll tell you why. Think about yourself when you're in a hockey pool and your team is, you have big injury and your team's eliminated in November. Basically, you lose your top pick. What happens? You stop paying attention. You stop caring. And I think that for the league, a league that's as concerned with, the gates and fan interest, mm-hmm. You can't afford to have a team like anywhere, really. But let's just say Arizona. You can't have Arizona fall out in November. You can't afford to. You need the fans to actually care into January, February, fine. Then it starts to tail off when you realize, okay, my team's out of it. So my perspective is the league, which again, like I said, loves gate, needs the gate to draw those fans in, isn't going to do anything that's going to offset that or hurt that, I should say.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I don't think that it's going to happen. I think it should happen, but I mean, I also realize the reality of the situation. Look, there's a reason why what drives me the most crazy is when a team is 11-10-7, let's say. Mm-hmm. Oh, they're one game under 500. No,
fine.
They're not one game under 500. They're not. They are.
Wouldn't they be one game above 500?
Sorry, one game. They're one game above 500. Well, they're not. They're 6 games under 500.
Yeah, of course.
You're right.
Yeah. I mean, look at winning percentage. Don't look at points percentage.
Yes. And
that's what they do in the AHL.
Yeah, and it's lazy for anybody to say they're one game above 500 when they're not. Be smarter than that. Don't buy into that argument. Look at the winning percentage. The winning percentage is what matters. It's
yes.
Not the points percentage. A 500 points percentage, that leaves you at home each and every year in the NHL.
And, Drew, it's a good point, Drew. I agree with you. I'd love to disagree with you because I prefer that over agreeing with you, but I have to agree with you here. And, you know, if you have a chance, read the article by Pierre LeBrun, because he talks about, you know, some of the big changes that came in 2005. And then he later talks about how the GMs discussed this in 2007. And there's a good quote from Brian Burke in there where he said that, you know, he didn't think this had much legs, but then they researched it. And, you know, we talked about English soccer, and he said that after they changed to that point system, the conclusion of the study was that it had no impact on the results. Right? So, I mean, that shows
the
you...
The players don't get extra motivation, you're saying, for winning in
yes.
regulation.
The quote exactly is, yeah. The basic conclusion of the study is that it had no impact on results, that players were properly incentivized to win the game regardless.
You know, and of course, Pierre in the article talks with a number of different general managers about their opinions, and to the surprise of absolutely nobody, the general managers are in favor of the current system, because every general manager and every team looks... Unless you're really terrible, really truly terrible, every team, you know, to a fan who's a casual fan, doesn't really pay much attention, every team looks tolerably okay with their performance on the ice. When in reality, anybody who actually watches a team night in, night out knows that they're a lousy team getting propped up by these fake artificial standings.
Right, I would agree. I personally think there's too much parity in the NHL.
What's wrong with the juggernaut? What's wrong with the dynasty?
That's what I think. I'm not saying that, you know, teams, you don't want to see a lot of competitive teams, Dave, but, I mean, right now with these bonus points, I mean, everybody's in it essentially up until, what, February, March?
Well, I mean, yeah.
And again, I really think that's a revenue situation. I think that's a function of the league saying, well, do you want to have 15,000, 20,000 in the building, or do you want to have 10?
Yeah, and, well, and right. It's about money. If they weren't a gate-driven league, if the NHL made all their money from television and like the NFL does or Major League Baseball does with some of these huge contracts,
sure.
Now, they wouldn't give a damn.
No, but and I think that how many times do you hear players say it's a business? I mean, you know, people love hockey for the sport, but at the end of the day, it's about numbers and it's a business, and there's a business model, and the reality is that businesses are in it to make money.
Sure.
And so how do you make money? You make money by keeping fans interested. How do you keep fans interested? By keeping their teams in the playoffs race longer.
Right.
So again, it's all pie in the sky. It's all well and good to say, well, we want, you know, Chicago to have 60 points at this, you know, instead of 40, and instead, you know, Arizona, I'm not picking on them, I'm just using them as an example.
Well, they're the last in the league.
But so, I'm just saying, like, so to have 20, not 30, you know what I mean? So that's all well and good from a reality perspective, but again, it doesn't matter because it's about money, and money is going to trump this notion that you don't need to have this artificial parity. Who cares? Because the NHL wants to make it, and that's what they're doing by keeping a team like Arizona and their fans in the race.
Here's a couple of quotes. The first one comes from Mike Keenan. Mike, of course, coached in the KHL for a number of years.
Mike.
The KHL uses the 3-2-1 point system.
Yep.
So here's the quote from Mike Keenan. Quote, they do have the three-point system in the KHL, and I think it separates the groups a little bit more than the two-point system. The better teams accelerate their positions by having the 3 points as a possibility. That's the biggest difference I've seen. I like it. I think people like to have dynasties, and they're not going to get them now in the NHL. You saw the separation in the KHL with the better teams, but it also allowed fans to cheer for true underdogs. That's Mike Keenan, a former coach in the KHL. Here's Brian Burke, you know, who takes the opposite side, as you wouldn't be surprised in the least bit, but here's Brian Burke. Quote, you will have teams mathematically eliminated from the playoffs by Christmas. I really think so, said the Calgary Flames president of hockey operations. I have zero interest in that. None. I'd rather put a sharp stick in my eye. Not sure why he's putting a stick in his eye, but that's a separate issue, I guess, for another day and time.
Yeah, but there's going to be teams that are already out of it by the playoffs. Anyways, we talked about American Thanksgiving, Drew.
Yeah.
If you're 3 or 4 points behind, you know, the playoff line by American Thanksgiving, there's a good chance you're not making the playoffs.
Does anybody in this room think the Coyotes, the Avalanche, the Canucks, or the Islanders are going to go on a run and make the playoffs?
No.
Does anybody need those teams to be, you know, tell their fans they're close to a playoff spot? Their fans aren't that stupid. They know when the team is lousy. The Islanders have 22 points on the season. They're 5 points out of a playoff spot. And sure, it doesn't sound like a big number, but they have 7 teams they would have to leap over. You know, the NHL is not giving any credit to their fan base of being intelligent enough to know a lousy hockey team when they see one.
I think you have to ask the question, Drew, you know, Brian Burke talked about it. You know, what benefit is it to the team or the fans just to keep the team in it for a little bit longer? You're kind of delaying the inevitable, right?
Which, again, goes back to the money argument.
Yeah.
There's
nobody who looks at the Colorado Avalanche right now and is going to buy a ticket because, oh, they're only X number of points out of the playoffs. People buying the ticket are going to buy it regardless.
Well, no, I don't know if I agree with you, Drew, because the truth is that you're not necessarily appealing to hardcore fans, which are generally in the minority. You're trying to appeal to a majority, which is generally a more casual. And a more casual fan looks at the sports page and says, oh, the Colorado Avalanche are, you know, within a couple of points of a playoff spot. Yeah, maybe it'll be a good time. That's my perspective. I could be wrong, but that would be my personal take.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't buy it. I think it is time to go to the 3-2-1 system, but I also readily acknowledge that it ain't going to happen.
As an aside, the Chicago Blackhawks have a goalie.
Yes, I noticed that. It is former Temple University goaltender Eric Samborski.
I looked him up. He's never played any level. Last time he played was 2010, 2011 for the Jersey Wildcats.
Yeah, so Eric Samborski is signed to an amateur tryout. Yeah. He's going to be the Chicago Blackhawks' backup goaltender this afternoon in Philadelphia as Corey Crawford is out ill.
He's a Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania native, 23 years old.
And you can follow him on Twitter if you want, at Sembo182. So he definitely hopes that Scott Darling doesn't go down with any sort of injury or anything, because Eric Samborski would go from the frying pan to the fire?
I think Mark Lazarus was right when they said they're just going to find anybody and sign him to a contract.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to try and get a hold of Andy Strickland. He covers the St. Louis Blues. Might be a little busy talking to some Jets players, but we'll try and get a hold of Andy and bring him to you next to talk about the Blues ahead of the Blues Jets this afternoon, this evening, rather. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, 11:30, Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. Reminder, Hustler and Lawless, 3 p.m. to 5 p.m., of course, and then Rick Ralph brings you the pregame show from 5 to 6. And if you're in the neighborhood of Polo Park, Toy Mountain, big holiday toy drive going on, be sure to drop off an unwrapped present. You know, goes to some needy kids, always a very important good cause. Should mention this segment of the show brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Perhaps you don't have New Year's Eve plans as of yet. Gentlemen, you guys have New Year's Eve plans as of yet?
Yeah, Moose game.
Moose game. No, it's Jets game.
Jets game, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say Moose game. Jets game.
I feel like the Moose are playing too, though.
Jets Islanders on New Year's Eve this
year. Oh, yeah, we got Arthur Staple, that's right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
There you go, there's my plan.
There's your plan. You and Arthur going to hang out?
Yeah, maybe I'll hit Earl's Main after, you never know.
Yeah, you tend to do that sort of thing. But anyways, if you're looking for New Year's Eve plans and you don't have them yet, check it out, Rumors Comedy Club. Great option for New Year's Eve. Maybe you're looking to get a gift card for somebody. Rumors, they have gift cards. Yeah. Great gift.
Nice and a lot of laughs. People like to laugh on New Year's.
People like to laugh. It's a very funny time of the year. New Year's, good celebration. Check it out, rumorscomedyclub.com. Working to get Andy Strickland, as I mentioned. He's a little busy at the moment. We'll try and bring him on to you before the top of the hour. NHLPA formally rejected the NHL's offer regarding the Olympics. For those of you who have forgotten, the NHL said, "We'll be glad to go to the Olympics, players, if you agree to extend the collective bargaining agreement for the next 3 seasons."
That's called bargaining 101 right there.
Yeah, so to the surprise of absolutely nobody, the players had no interest in the idea. The NHLPA formally informed the NHL yesterday that thanks for the offer, but no thanks. We're going to not accept that offer. So the Olympics up in the air. Hard to believe we're already talking about potential work stoppage in the NHL. And I think it's especially apropos because you look at Major League Baseball. They managed to get a new collective bargaining agreement done this past week. 5-year extension for Major League Baseball. The NBA expected to get their collective bargaining agreement done in the next couple weeks. No work stoppage there. Only the NHL at this point in time, it seems, is prone to these pointless labor disruptions where the players get locked out by the owners and the fans suffer the most.
It's beyond embarrassing. It really is. I mean, at this point, that you can't have some sort of like labor peace and agreement as to how you see things moving forward. And you know, the owners have a tendency in the NHL to be pretty iron-fisted with their position, and they hold to it. And generally, the players seem to cave eventually because they just want to play. And they know, you know, and what do the owners know? The owners, I mean, it doesn't matter if, you know, Mark Chipman is 40 or 60, he's still the owner, and it doesn't matter what his age is. But players know that, again, like I said earlier in the show, that they only have a certain amount of time to play the NHL and make those NHL dollars. So I think at the end of the day, you know, the players just want to play hockey, and that's what they say, but really they want to play hockey so they can make a paycheck that they won't have a chance to make. But again, it's embarrassing that, you know, you're looked at. You want to be a big boy league, but at the end of the day, you keep having these work stoppages over and over and over again.
Yeah, on the topic of the Olympics, Dave, if you remember back to 2014 Sochi Olympics, the NHL, the NHLPA, the IIHF, IOC, they didn't agree to go to the Olympics until July 2013. So this isn't unprecedented, right? So
sure.
Just because they haven't come out and said that they're going, I mean, I know that the NHL and the NHLPA have said that they want to know by January 2017 because of the schedule and all that, but it's possible that they don't formally announce it until March, April of 2017. I'm not saying that that's when it's going to be announced, but it's certainly not unprecedented that they have had problems. But I look at it like this. The NHL has been in the last five Winter Olympics since 1998, and I realize the owners don't like shutting down the league for 3 weeks, and you know they don't make any money off of the Olympics, but I think there's going to be too much pressure from the NHLPA, the players. The players want to go, and we've talked about it. A guy like Alex Ovechkin's already come out and said
he's
going to go to the 2018 Olympics, regardless if the NHL is participating. And Alex Ovechkin is not you know, some third or fourth line grinder. He's one of the top players in the NHL. So I think that there is going to be a significant amount of pressure from Donald Fehr and the NHLPA, and it's because the players want to go and they want to play there. So, you know, the IIHF has already said that they're going to, you know, kick in, you know, some of these costs and maybe cover all of the $10 million, you know, fees for the insurance and the accommodations and all of that. I mean, I said it, you know, when we first started talking about it, Drew, about a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think the NHL is 100% going.
Yeah, you've been steadfast in your opinion there. That's certainly the, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's amazing that everything between these two sides has to be an absolute war. Can they ever work together? I mean, it's just the water so poisoned.
They worked together on the World Cup of Hockey.
Well, that's because it financially benefited both of them. So when there's money on the line where they both get paid, then they seem to work well together. But every other situation where anytime the money is a conflict as opposed to a source of, you know, a benefit for both sides, they just can't seem to get out of their own way. You know, Major League Baseball, you know, it's been how many years now since Major League Baseball had a work stoppage? 94. So what's that? That's, you know,
22 years.
Yeah. 22 years since baseball had a work stoppage, and then they just signed another agreement. Basketball had a work stoppage however many years ago that was, and they were, you know, and then they've been able to get things going. I think the players and the owners need to understand that the NHL is not at the level of Major League Baseball, the NFL, and NBA. It's just not. Financially, it is not. The television deals in those three leagues just dwarf the NHL's. And they need to acknowledge it's not a big four. It really isn't. It's a big three and then a very large one. And so they have to stop comparing themselves to their NBA and MLB and NBA brethren and negotiate from a different frame of reference.
They can't have another lockout, in my opinion.
I think they will. Why is there any reason to believe that the owners won't lock out the players again? Give me one reason for optimism.
I would say because they've already had two lockouts and what it did to the game and how the fans
came back.
Well, some of them did. Most of them did. But
they all did. Where are they struggling?
That's the whole point, though. Like, there's no repercussions. Like, no, the fans don't. It's not like the fans en masse say, you know what? We're going to strike from you, which is what they should do.
Yeah.
I mean, if they have the audacity to have another lockout, I mean, it's just, it's pathetic. They really are. You can't use any strong, well, I mean, I'm sure you could use stronger language, but like, to be able to have this inability to find labor peace
right.
when there's so much money to be made. I mean, let's be realistic. These guys aren't like, it's not like, look, you're not making baseball money. Like we were talking Jose Bautista contract, you know, guy who wants to make $25 million a season. It's to me, that's the other end of the scale. It's obnoxious how much these baseball guys are making, but at the same time, they have a huge pie to draw from.
Sure.
Right. So then but hockey is different. So fine, find that medium. Find, you know, if you don't like escrow, you want to get rid of it. You want to, you know, modify it. Like there's negotiations. A negotiation doesn't have to result in these stalemates. And that's unfortunately what seems to happen. They harden their positions. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately it ends up proving completely worthless because the players cave for the reasons I illustrated earlier.
Because they're the ones who have the finite lifespan on their career.
Right.
They're the ones who have only a limited time.
Think about it.
Yeah.
Do you want $5 million less? If you're think about it like this. You're Chris Thorburn, you have a chance to make $1 million or not.
Mm-hmm.
You're not getting that chance again.
Every year, you don't play.
And remember, the older players, I mean, think about it like this from this perspective. The older players are the ones who have the power within the NHLPA. Now, generally, that might be changing because the NHL is getting younger. But it's always, you know, every year, whenever there's a lockout, there's always that talk about older players are the driving force. They're the ones who are kind of running the ship, you know, like the Ron Hainsey's, that sort of thing. Those are the guys who have the greatest influence. Those are also the guys who generally have, A, the most money.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the guys who have the most incentive to be playing and making that money. And they're the ones who are making the decisions ultimately. I mean, obviously, it's the entire collective. But they're the ones who can kind of shape that framework that goes out to those guys and says, okay, this is what we're thinking of doing. But those guys have an interest in playing. They have a vested interest in making money because they don't know how many more years they're going to have to make $1, $2, $3, $4, or $5 million. And that money goes into the bank for the rest of their lives.
Sure.
So ultimately, we know how this goes. We know this. We've seen this dance all too many times before. And like I said, an owner going from being 40 to 41 or 40 or 60 to 65, 60, I guess, that'd be a pretty big jump for 5 years, but 60 to 61, it's not going to impact him. It's just money that goes into their bank account at the end of the day. But a player is not getting back that year of hockey.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Dave. I mean, and that's no surprise, of course. I mean, maybe we can, you know, as I appreciate your optimism, and maybe there will be some, maybe they'll come to their senses before the CBA expires, or maybe they'll figure something out that gets them to Pyeongchang for the Olympics and then gets some sort of, you know, incentive for the owners on the back end. I just have no reason for optimism because I look at the parties involved. It's the same parties. It's the same pointless fights between one side to the other where neither side looks to the greater good and says, you know, I don't need 100% of success. I'm okay with, you know, getting 55% of success, and the other side can hold their head up and get 45% of the success.
Yeah, it's optimism that there won't be another lockout, but it's also just I you know, feel sorry for hockey fans if we have to go through another lockout, because hockey fans have already been through two lockouts, one full season and one half season, and it was
three lockouts.
It was painful, just painful.
Yeah, everybody forgets about that first lockout back in the 90s.
But yeah, I'm talking about
the two
in most recent memory.
Yeah, absolutely right.
And the other thing I was going to say is I think the equation is different for the Olympics if it's not South Korea and China. Sure. So if you were playing in Salt Lake City, Utah, then I think it's a different part of the, you know, it changes the dynamic.
That's what makes the owner's hypocrisy so distasteful, is that if it benefited them from a television eyes point of view, they would be much rather be there. Like, they want to be in Beijing. Well,
the hardcore hockey fans are still going to watch it regardless if it's on, you know, on at 7 o'clock or 2 in the morning.
I think they'll adjust the schedule anyway, so it's not, you're not going to be watching. Look, Canada's not playing at 2:30 in the morning.
Well, they did in Nagano.
That's true.
They did in Nagano. But the point is, even if you are playing at 2:30 in the morning, look beyond yourself, look beyond your own skin, and think about the eyeballs you're getting in China and the eyeballs you're getting in Asia watching that game. That's a huge market you want to tap into. And you can't tell me that they're not watching in China just because it's in South Korea, and then they're going to be watching 4 years later.
I believe
it's all the same.
Didn't we stay up all night and watch the Nagano game and stuff like that?
So everybody did. So, you had parties around it.
Well, in Russia too.
Yeah, exactly. So that's my whole point, is that it makes it a more memorable contest because you're sitting there going, like, you know, you remember that. Oh, that's. But I just think, like, you see, like, players like Alexander Ovechkin who have already declared they're going.
Yeah.
And what is Ted Leontis going to do? Are you going to piss off your number one player on your team, who's the foundation of your team? I don't see. I see, and Leons is the kind of owner in my mind, and again, I don't know him, but I just, from what I've read and what I've seen, that would seem to want to kind of accommodate his star player. Sure. So I think that he'll be on board at
least. Fight's worth fighting.
That's right.
Ted Leonsis does not earn anything and gain anything by fighting with Alex Ovechkin.
Yeah.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk. We'll see if we can get a hold of Andy Strickland, and if we can't, we'll talk about the Leafs and the Canucks. A blood feud tonight, potentially?
Maybe the Moose and the Stars?
Yeah, know, Star
little,
Wars Day.
We'll touch
on that, too. One final segment to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
One final segment this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Minuk with you. One quick note from Paul Maurice's media scrum. Mark Scheifele, a game-time decision for the Jets, obviously was banged up in Thursday's game against the Oilers. So Maurice unable to confirm his lineup for tonight's Jets-Blues game, as Scheifele is a game-time decision. Alex Burmistrov would likely come into the regular group if Scheifele is unable to go. We'll know more a little bit closer to 6 p.m. tonight, so stay tuned to TSN 1290 for the latest on that.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the program Andy Strickland. Andy is the St. Louis Blues ringside reporter for Fox Sports Midwest. Andy, really appreciate you joining us. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it. How are you?
Doing very well, Andy. You know, obviously the Jets and the Blues coming up in about a little more than 6 hours' time. Blues off to a good record, 14-7-3. But I look at their goals for, goals against, and their differential is zero. 67 goals for, 67 goals against. Not typical of a Ken Hitchcock team to have goals against that high, 20th in the entire NHL.
No, it's not. But if you look at the games and, you know, the Blues have played this year, they've had a couple of really bad ones on the road where they gave up 8 against Columbus, they gave up 6 against the Dallas Stars, 5 against the New York Rangers. I think they've been able to button things up. I mean, you look at the Blues, save percentage, especially on home ice. I mean, Jake Allen's been one of the best goaltenders in the league at home. The Blues have been one of the best home teams in the National Hockey League. They've really been able to keep the goals against down. Obviously, Tampa Bay got a few past Jake Allen in the previous game. The Blues are still able to win. So, I mean, I think you're right. Traditionally, St. Louis is a team that doesn't give up a whole lot in terms of scoring chances. They always keep the shots against down, and as a result, they don't give up a whole lot of goals either. I would expect that to change, and I would think that goal differential is going to change as well. You just look at where they were prior to coming into this homestand. They were minus, you know, quite a few, and obviously have been able to get that back up to an even number, as you said.
Andy, you tweeted this out yesterday. Carter Hutton is going to start in goal for the St. Louis Blues tonight against the Winnipeg Jets. You mentioned Jake Allen has been very good at home. Did Ken Hitchcock decide to go with Carter Hutton just because he hasn't played in a week and a half?
Well, he just said it's his turn, but I think if you look at the previous game against Tampa Bay, it wasn't Jake's best game. He didn't see a ton of action early on, and obviously, like I said, they gave up 4 goals against, which is uncharacteristic for Jake Allen. But, you know, in the past, I think, you know, the coaching staff has been very good with how they handle goaltenders, whether it was Jake last year or Brian Elliott. You know, even if they win the game after playing several in a row, and if you see maybe they didn't have their A game, sometimes that can be a foreshadow for what's to come in the following game. And, you know, I think Jake Allen's a little bit, he's probably disappointed. He wanted to play in tonight's game. But with that being said, I think the coaching staff realized maybe it's best for Jake to sit back, hit the reset button, and take a game off prior to the Montreal Canadiens coming in here on Tuesday. So, you know, Carter Hutton's going to get the start. And, you know, this guy's a true pro. I think the organization's been very impressed with what he's brought to the table, both in practice and obviously in the game. Well, he hasn't played a whole lot of home games this season. Last couple of the starts have been on the road. So a chance for him to get on home ice and get a game in. And I think, you know, I think it's important also for Ken Hitchcock that he uses his backup goaltender, keeps him involved. they felt like tonight against Winnipeg would be a good opportunity for that.
Andy Strickland, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Andy is the ringside reporter for Fox Sports Midwest, covering the St. Louis Blues. Andy, when we were previewing the game earlier in the show, earlier in the first hour, we were talking about how this might not be the same St. Louis Blues team we're used to seeing in years past. Very physical, very, you know, grind you down low. With the subtraction of David Backes and then guys like Robbie Fabry playing a more significant role, is this a less physical but more skilled St. Louis Blues team?
Yeah, I would say so. Certainly less physical, although the Blues have big bodies on the back end with Robert Bertuzzo and Colton Pareko, even Petrangelo and Bo Meester. These are bigger players. You know, Joel Edmondson, who's a young player, still isn't ready to return from an upper body injury, but he's a big physical player. You know, up front, I think the identity is much different than what we've seen in the past. And you're right, Robbie Fabry's playing a bigger role. Jaden Schwartz, obviously, is a quicker, smaller player. He's healthy this season after missing, I think, 50 games last year with an ankle injury where he shattered his ankle. You know, you look at the way the Blues are built. David Braun comes on board. Not exactly, you know, a fast player, but he plays the game quick with quick puck movement, and he's a very smart, intelligent player. You know, they just don't play the same type of physical games. And I'll tell you this. It may not be the, you know, finishing checks type of physicality, but they use their physicality a little different through body position, lifting sticks, winning board battles. You know, it's not always about the number of hits in the course of a game that lead to physical play, but there's other elements of being physical without, you know, running the opposing player through the board. So they still feel like, you know, they're a tough team to play against, even though they're maybe not as physical, or maybe it doesn't show up on the stat sheet maybe as much as it did in the past.
Andy, I wanted to ask you quickly here about Colton Pareko. You know, he had a fantastic rookie season last year with the St. Louis Blues. You know, he doesn't have a goal yet this year, but he's got 13 assists in 24 games. I guess no sophomore slump, it's safe to say, for Colton Pareko this year?
No, I think the organization maybe expected him to take a larger leap offensively, and maybe that his defensive game would come around maybe a little slower. It's actually been the opposite. I mean, this guy is turning himself into one of the top defenders in the National Hockey League with some real offensive upside that's still there. I mean, you got to be aware of a shot. Goaltenders have a hard time controlling it. Rebounds are usually there. He may be the quickest player in terms of foot speed that the Blues have on the roster. You know, his ability to, you know, escape pressure, to gain separation on the ice. You know, he loves to carry the puck, you know, up the ice, and you know, he has that ability to do that, and you'll see that from him tonight. I mean, he's very, very good from that standpoint. He's a great skater. So the goals haven't been there. He still gets a lot of shots on goal. You look at where he's at in terms of how he ranks among defensemen in the NHL in terms of shots. He's right up there near the top. So, again, you know, the goals haven't been there, like I said, but, you know, the way he reads plays, the way he's making plays, and as evidenced by him getting some assists, you know, he's still showing a complete game more often than not.
Andy, Nile Yakupov draws back into the lineup for the Blues tonight. Yuri Laterra is going to be a healthy scratch. Any signs of Yakupov rediscovering the form that made him a first overall draft pick?
You know, I don't know. We'll find out. I mean, I think they're happy with the way that he's been practicing as of late. And this guy obviously has an element of speed that he brings into the lineup. You know, Yuri Laterra is a guy who the Blues are very high on. You know, they have been the last couple of years. You know, they'd like to see a little bit better play up the middle. You know, Patrick Berglund's going to slide over, you know, back over and play center tonight on that line with Dmitry Yaskin and Yakupov. But, you know, Yakupov's a guy who, when given the puck in a scoring area, he knows what to do with it. He's got a really, really strong shot. He gets it off pretty quickly. But I think it's the other areas of the game that really have been maybe a little bit of an adjustment for him since coming over to St. Louis from Edmonton, not just offensively, but also in the defensive zone as well. A structure standpoint, from a systematic standpoint, there's a learning curve there in terms of how you have to play to be an effective player under Ken Hitchcock. I think he's still learning that, but I think he's getting better. I think the organization's really happy with his attitude off the ice, the way he approaches practice, and the way he approaches, you know, coming to the rink every day. So what will that mean moving forward? We're going to find out, but it's going to be a good opportunity for him to get back in there tonight.
Andy Strickland covers the St. Louis Blues for Fox Sports Midwest. Andy, really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
All right. Anytime, fellas. You guys take care.
You too, Andy. Take care. If you're a golf fan, Tiger Woods, 3-under through 3 holes today.
If you're a Star Wars fan, Moose game.
Moose Star Wars. Who are they playing, Dave?
Texas Stars.
Well, there you go.
Ironically enough,
Star Wars Day at MTS Center.
2 hours.
What's that?
In 2 hours.
2 hours. 2 o'clock start there. That's it for us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks to our sponsors. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. You can follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. Big props to producer Rory, doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.